Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Goat Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Kumo Long, with Ice Water. Just finished wrapping up another great episode of The First 40 on YouTube. Catch us there on the Goat Squad Sports Podcast. How you doing, Ice?
Good, brother. You?
All right. You're looking a little sleepy on The First 40, man. You're working hard, bro. I know you're working hard.
Man, there's a lot going on, bro. I'm trying to burn it on all ends, man. Like, you know what? We trying to bring it, bro. That's all we can do.
Right. Any overlapping stories you want to bring to the podcast before we get into our final four or other stories that we're going to be covering on this episode?
People waiting for it, man. Let's not waste any time. You know we got stuff to do. It seems like more people been tuning in because they want to hear about this Final Four and all this. We picked up a little ratings, so they want to see how horrible we were in predicting. So that's cool. But yeah, they want to hear it. Let's get
so,
to
so
it.
So what they've been saying so far? Because I had a few people mad at me about Dayton. I had a few people mad about me about Baylor.
Nobody's really said anything, but I can just tell. I look at the upticks as to when more people will pay attention to the episode, and we haven't done much more differently. I mean, considering what stuff going on, so you got to do the math. Where the championship, the game, we were the ones that came out and said we're gonna do a bracket. So I think people are interested in that. I might be totally wrong, but if not, tell me why. What's the uptick? What is drawing you for guys in the last couple weeks? I think it's the NCAA basketball. It'll be smooth. I ain't got a couple haters out there anyway. Not haters. I just say non-supporters. That's better.
All right. Man, this is I've been doing my homework and research and looking at these teams and for Final Four. So I didn't give it away on our pages because I wanted people to listen to the show to see how we came up to this particular Final Four. So we had the 68, narrowed it down to 32 1 week, and then we narrowed it down to the Final Four. And so Monday would have been the the national championship or the Monday before, but we're going to give you a championship. We are going to determine a championship tonight. So the first game that will probably be played is between Villanova and Michigan State. And so do you want me to go first or do you want to go first on this one?
Is Villanova Michigan State? It was?
It was Villanova. Was it? Or was it Louisville, Michigan State?
Let me see. Villanova. I thought it was gonna be. I might be wrong. We might have to look at that. I thought it was Villanova, Gonzaga, then Kansas.
No, it's Kansas and Gonzaga. The two number ones going at it, and then you had.
Let's see.
I have Villanova, Michigan State. And then I have.
Wait a minute, because my whole thing is messed up. Then what?
What you got?
Let me just take one thing, because I'm like, what the hell? We done got the people all mixed up. I got them mixed up. One of the two. Let's see. He said that there. So that would be there. And then the East. So the East would be there. So they would play. Yeah, you know, you're right. So it would be. It would be the South.
Gonzaga versus Kansas.
Right.
South versus the East, and the Midwest versus the West.
Right, because Dayton was. So it'd be Villanova. That's right, though, right? Villanova, Kansas.
Okay, Villanova. Okay,
yeah,
anywhere we want it.
Here's my thing. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it would be the Midwest, which is Kansas, right? And then Villanova would come out the East, as we said, which means they would play Kansas.
Okay.
Right? And then it would be South, which would be, who the hell do we say? You know, Gonzaga, and then Michigan State would have been, if I'm not mistaken, would have came out the South. Is that right? Yeah. So,
okay.
So Villanova, Kansas, and then Michigan State.
Villanova,
Gonzaga.
Kansas.
Here we go.
And Gonzaga. Okay.
Okay.
So who you got in the Villanova, Kansas game?
Woo, man. I had to be ready because I know people are going to listen. They're going to say, man, y'all just going out the cuff. Y'all really paying attention. This is a tough game because a lot was going on, and you got to pay a lot. You pay really close attention. The one thing I loved about it was these two teams play earlier in the season, back in December.
Mm-hmm.
And Villanova beat Kansas by 56-55. Kansas had a couple of times to win the game. Devin Dotson had an opportunity to tie the game with a free throw, and he missed it. And then he had an opportunity to win the game. When he got a contested shot, he had an opportunity to win the game, and he came up short. But with all that being said, looking at these teams, I think they were going two different places after that December run. Villanova they lost a lot early. You lost to Baylor, Ohio State, Marquette, Seton Hall, Providence early on. Then they kind of turned it around, and they finished the season 7-4. They lost three straight in the start up open September, and then they won from there. But and they barely got by their last two games against. They beat Creighton, and I think they beat Georgetown. So 7-4. But Kansas finished the season 19-1. And I think that considering them losing early on in the season, I think they would have found a way to get by Villanova and went to the national championship just because of the way they were on the road. So the last, like I said, Villanova 7-4 in their last 11, and Kansas was 19-1, and they had lost only two games. So I think they would have been really more than amped up to kind of redeem themselves for a loss that they had back in December.
Yeah, if we're going Kansas Villanova, I remember that game with Villanova, and Villanova got him in that game. But since that game, because I remember saying that Azubuike needed to be more like a dog in order for Kansas to move on and become better during the season. And since then, you're right. Looking at the statistics, Azubuike just went off. He started playing possessed. And so I think that would have been the difference. I couldn't see anybody on Villanova's team that can handle Azubuike. I couldn't see Villanova going into a zone to try to slow down Azubuike and really kind of make any headway with Dotson and some of the supporting cast of Kansas who can shoot. Their front court can shoot. I mean, the back court can shoot. And the front court, I think, will put a lot of pressure on Villanova, where Kansas is not the same team they played earlier this season. And Kansas has been on a roll, winning their conference, and I think they would have been in that national championship game on Monday. All right, what's the other game that we need to look at?
Yeah, the other game Gonzaga versus Michigan State.
Yeah, this has been tough. This would have been real tough. You know, I've been riding with Michigan State, falling in love with them all over again. But I had to look at which team is better in defensive rebounding. Even though Michigan State has the edge in rebounding, defensive rebound by maybe a point, a rebound or so, I looked at the assist to turnover ratio, and Gonzaga is a little bit better with that. They take care of the ball a little bit better, even though Michigan State is not too far behind there. But I would think that this game would really kind of come down to who made more mistakes. And I think Gonzaga's guards could step up to the task and really kind of frustrate, not Cassius Winston, so to speak, but everybody Cassius Winston is trying to get involved in the game. And I think it would be a yeoman's effort from him to try to overcome Gonzaga. Gonzaga reminds me of that team that played North Carolina in the championship. They're solid in all different positions, and I think that they would play smarter down low and could put Michigan State's big men in trouble. And I just don't see Michigan State coming out of here with a win. So I have to go with Gonzaga against Michigan State. Even though I like Michigan State, I had to go with them.
Wow, this is going to be interesting. We're going to have to, I don't know what we're going to do with this one. We have to see. We'll see if we can break this down.
We can debate it. We can debate it. But
yeah, we might have to. Okay. I looked at both teams. Gonzaga was 31-2, right? In their two losses, though, there was one thing that was really significant. They lost to Michigan, 82-64. When Michigan was on fire earlier in the year, Michigan was like undefeated. They won like 8 or 9 straight, and they lost 82-64. And then later in the season, Gonzaga got ran out by BYU 91-78. And truly, for me, the only quality win that they had was against Oregon. They beat Oregon 73-72 in overtime. So they, you know, this is how they go. But in those two games against Michigan and also the loss to BYU, Michigan and BYU shot the ball real well. I think they both shot over 50%. They did real well, and they just, like, ran them out. So the size that I thought Gonzaga could use to kind of play at a certain pace or kind of slow the game down to something to that effect, it didn't work. And I know that they won a lot of games, but when I looked at the schedule, I didn't really see a lot of things that impressed me. And like I said, not to lose, it's one thing to lose to me to quality talent by like maybe 5-7 points. But, I mean, you lose by double figures to two of the best teams that you played in the league in the season. And you lost to BYU late as well by 13. That causes concern for me. Because if you play a team like Michigan State that had 9 losses, okay, 9 losses. They lost 3 straight starting out in February, and then they came back and won their last 5. And not only did they win the last 5, they were very impressive. Because for me, they have been – they're totally battle-tested, right? Battle-tested. They lost 3 straight coming out of February, and they won their last 5. And in those last 5, they defeated Iowa, Maryland, Penn State, and Ohio State. And they were hot. They were going on and – my only problem with it is I can see where talent-wise or size-wise, you would say Gonzaga, you would think that they would kind of pull it out and be able to use that defense and that size to get it going. But the guard play and the tenacity that the defense, that the Big Ten plays, right? You know how the Big Ten plays and how they come at you. So they're not worrying about losing. I think Gonzaga would have been more or less thinking about, man, are we going to lose? They're trying to play not to lose. And you saw what Michigan did to them as well. So I don't know. I had to fight. I'm gonna have to fight for Michigan because Michigan State, because of the fact that they won five straight. It was ugly, 22-9. And I know you know, that's your cats. But I just like the way that they were battle tested and they can get nasty, and they had nothing to lose. And that's why if I was gonna pick something right now, that probably would be me choosing Michigan State. Plus, too, the other part of it too is that they had the experience as far as the coach is concerned. He's been there before.
Okay, let me throw something else at you. With this.
Sure.
When I looked at the stats, and I looked at the offensive stats, you had in scoring offense, Gonzaga scored 87.4 points a game. You want to take a guess on how much Michigan State scored?
I have no idea. Go ahead.
It's about 75.9 points a game. And so that's a difference of 12 points a game. So I'm trying to figure out, when I was looking at this, I was trying to figure out, where does Michigan State have the offense to beat Gonzaga? Even though Gonzaga had maybe a less tougher schedule, looking at three-point shooting, looking at field goal percentage, where did Michigan State have enough to cut down that 12 point difference? Then I look at defensive rebounding, which both schools pretty much are the same, with Gonzaga having 28 defensive rebounds per game, which means that they're forcing missed shots and they're getting the boards. And Michigan State was number six in the country with 29 defensive rebounds. But so I was trying to figure out, when I was looking at these statistics, where does Michigan State kind of get headway, other than playing in a tough Big Ten, where do they get headway to compensate for the 12 points that Gonzaga could score a little bit more in their average? Because when they go, they go. They're a deceptive running team. Could Michigan State play a good enough defense to kind of shut down 12 points or force them into turnovers, or to erase that 12-point average from Gonzaga? And I couldn't see it looking at the stats. But I'll defer to you to answer some of those questions, because I don't have a problem with going with Michigan State, because that was the team I was rolling with. But looking at Gonzaga, I did not want to kind of sell them short, so to speak.
I understand. I'm glad you asked me that question. I'm glad you did these questions. So do me a favor and tell me again, how many points did you say Gonzaga averaged a game?
They averaged 87.4 points a game.
87.4. All right.
Compared to 75.9 points for Michigan State.
Okay. All right. That's cool. That's exactly what I need. So remember, I told you, and there are two losses. Michigan versus Michigan, they scored 64 points.
Mm-hmm.
82-64. In their loss to BYU, they scored 78 points. They're almost 10 points less in both. They're more than 10. They're more almost 10 points less against BYU that they scored to their average, and they clearly were below their average against Michigan. Which is the two teams that were better. So I guess my point there is, the way that Michigan State plays, I guess the schedule talks to me. I understand about the stats, but the schedule talks to me. And that's why people didn't want to hear what I had to say about Dayton. You run through this conference. I hate to do that, but I'm just saying, you're running through this conference. You're 18-0 in your conference, but whoever you play, when you get to that next level. And it's here, though, for Gonzaga, because the two teams that really gave them trouble outside of their conference, they had trouble with. They lost by double digits. So as much as they may have the talent, it's kind of like when I looked at San Diego State. They talented out the wazoo, very good. But when you go to that next level, are you good enough to play somebody that's a champion just as well, or somebody that's battle-tested? And for me, Michigan State is battle-tested. I mean, I give it to you. Granted, I get the numbers. And I know you can say, what have they done besides the Big Ten? What else you need to do, man? That's how you win. You need less. Listen to Villanova and Seton Hall. That's how you earn your money. Because when you come out of that, or when North Carolina's good, they play Duke, they play the other teams that are really good. And when you come out of that Texas Tech as well, you come out of that conference, you're going to earn your money. You're going to put money in the war. You're going to be warring. And so you play somebody else like this, you're like, man, they don't even know they really ready to go. Y'all just running and gunning?
Yeah.
You playing no D? And you know Coach Izzo's going to come at it. All I'm saying is, we say defense wins championships. There's not too many times you look at Villanova when they play and won championships that you go, man, that's like the best team in the country. But they find a way because they play that kind of hardcore blue-collar basketball. And I just think that this will be too much for this Gonzaga team because I don't think they really had, you know, a couple years ago, you know, when they were one of my favorite teams, I think they had the superstars to probably get it done. This year, I'm not sure that's certain if they do. If they don't have them, you already know. Coach Izzo going for the juggler. You know, so I don't know. That's just me. I'm going to leave
well,
it up to you.
I will concede and put Michigan State against Kansas because that does sound like it would be a great matchup on a championship Monday. Looking at the statistics, it was just really kind of hard. And like I said, I've been saying it for weeks, fall in love with Michigan State. They're playing hot at the right time. But I was trying to figure out, could they play enough defense to slow down Gonzaga once Gonzaga got in a roll? And they're the number one seed. They're not playing, they didn't get into the tougher teams until the second round. And Michigan State really had to kind of fight their way through playing a Virginia, playing a Louisville, playing some other teams coming out of the South. They really had to fight to get their way. And even though battle-tested, after coming out off a 31-plus game season, not even counting the conference championship, did they have enough to hunker down one more game and get to the final? But I'm going to concede to Michigan State because I like Michigan State. And I didn't want to seem like
just say
pushing
you.
Them throughout the whole picks. Yes.
Can I throw one other thing at you? Early on, when we said Michigan was playing real well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State, the first time they played them, beat them 87-69 in January this year. And then, of course, they lost, and then Michigan came beat them by, what was it? They beat them 77-68. So my point is, though, Michigan State, if they can do that or get close to Michigan, I think they would have something for Gonzaga. Because sometimes I think, and there's no disrespect to Gonzaga, but I think some of it comes down to we talked about just about comes down to toughness. You know, how tough are you? Are you going to bring this all the time? What are you doing? How tough are you? And if that's the case, then I just need to see it. And like I said, the main thing for me was those two major teams or major losses were by double figures. I mean, especially Michigan. Michigan was good early on, but they weren't like great. They ended up 19-12, 10-10 in the Big Ten. And you lose by almost 20 to Michigan? I'm a little concerned.
Okay. Well, we got in the final game before we go to break. We got in the final game, Kansas against Michigan State for the national championship. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and finish this NCAA tournament simulation with Ice Water and Puma right after this.
I'm rather extraordinary. My diamonds is off and every. We getting money. Genius. And I continue to get that paper. So won't you mind your business? Don't be a fucking hater.
I need that. You got the remedy.
You look surprised, man. I got a refresh in your memory. Get through, get it, mujeres. Tell me what you want. But before I can blow my lie, baby, lit up the brand new funk. Yeah. and smack your ass halfway across, bro, in Allegheny. No Alizé and Henny. This time peeing strawberries for the hottest lady. You got a body, baby. So Desi Jeff, how you riding, baby? Yo, Jeff, you think she got it?
Yeah, she got it, Petey.
Whoa, she makes me wanna. But before this party gets started, let your boy hit that brand new song. Deep crack Philly, who are around with me? What, slow up, young buck, ain't that it to me? I got bullies.
Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is Ice Water and Puma. We narrowed it down to the final two. Championship Monday. It's Kansas versus Michigan State. And I think I went first last time. Ice, who do you think comes out as the national champion? 2020.
Wow, this is tough.
Woo! It's all been tough. But before I'll let that marinate. What are some of the teams that we had, like, we picked a week and then we had a week to stew on it? What are some of the teams where you go, you know what, I don't know about that one. I would have picked this one if I had another chance at it.
Let's see. The Duke Iowa game. Yeah. It's hard not to see Duke go through, but yeah, Duke Iowa. And another one. I know they're gonna say whatever, but Dayton and Butler.
Dayton Butler.
Second round. Yep. So yeah. Those two things really stand.
I was looking at Indiana Seton Hall, man. You know how much I was loving Seton Hall this year. I just couldn't see Indiana beat them this year. I was looking at Auburn and Kansas. I would think Auburn could take it. Coming off that year last year, hungry, been there before. Actually, I was thinking about this. And I wouldn't have had any number one seeds in my Final Four this year, because the way the year had gone, who you thought was going to win would never win. And so nobody wanted to be number one, and every team that has been number one has been beat. And I thought this was a perfect year for, you know, you had four number ones go in and four number ones go out really easily and really quick, unexpectedly. Probably might not be the first time in history that they were out, but I could see that there were no number ones in my bracket. I would not have put a number one in that Final Four based on what this year, because we said it all year. This year was the most unpredictable basketball year. You was riding high with one team. I remember Michigan started beating teams by the boatload, got up into the top four, and then just dropped out of the top 25 in the next month. I mean, everybody who was number one was just dropping like flies. It's like nobody wanted to be number one. So I was thinking that same thing was going to carry over to this tournament, where all the number ones, everybody would be going after.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but there's usually always one number one. There's usually one that makes it through, and that was my issue with it. I agree with you. There was a lot of uncertainty. My problem with Auburn,
crazy.
You know, I love Auburn. I thought they were a perfect mix. They had five seniors. They had a lot of younger guys to mix in, too. I thought this was Bruce Pearl's chance at redemption, as you mentioned, from last year. But at some point, they just stopped playing well together. And they were losing games, like two and three games, that they were like the toughness that I saw earlier when they blasted Colgate. So they made Colgate players transfer, and then the transfer portal. Anyway, they beat them so bad. But things like that just made me go, like, they just didn't seem to be the same team that they were early on, the team I grew to really enjoy. And I think that was the issue why I thought, I'm not sure. They would have to have a great game. I'm not sure if they would, because they can play up and down. And then you know how that Azubuki get on that roll, and him and Dotson, like I told you, when they played in that tournament over in the Bahamas, they single-handedly beat Dayton. They both had like it was they almost combined for 70 points to win that game. In a real good right. game against your boy player of the year. So I don't know. I mean I understand what you're saying, but man, Kansas, man, they've been through it. Plus it's like the more fire, the more stuff you say about them, the more you say they messing up. Yeah, Snoop Dogg at the kick it off at the in October. The more you throw gasoline on their party, the more the higher they fire getting. They just like, all right, cool. Now what? Just bring it on. You can't get no hot. They're no hotter. That's why, I don't know. I think they would have, I still think they would have escaped from Auburn.
Now, I had a couple of teams that I thought would be bracket busters. I'll give mine, and I'll let you look and see who would have been bracket busters. And I mentioned these teams before. Belmont and Liberty, I thought would have been bracket busters in this tournament. I think they had the capability of upsetting some teams, in the way they play defense, the way they play offense, and also they had the 3-point percentage that was pretty good, and they had a lot of seniors on their team. I thought those two teams. And I think folks were thinking I was joking. I was talking to a couple of folks, and they were like, oh, man, are you serious about Liberty and Belmont? I was like, I had a chance to see these teams. Even though they didn't come out of one of the Power Five conferences, they could very well become bracket busters because they could flat out shoot. And all you need is with that game where you go 60-plus percent from the three-point line, and you can get a team real good. Who would have been your bracket buster?
I think I put them out there early on, but see, it's hard because I didn't really see somebody like a Creighton that really was like, man, I did. They're going to really break something out. Probably, and this is not really a shock, but I would probably say that's why I chose Butler, because I like the way the Butler plays. I think Butler could have made a run, and that's why I tried to convince you early on. I thought they would beat Maryland just because of their toughness. Maryland didn't come to play, and I think they would have had a shot to bang with Dayton, too, because they both know each other as far as being from the Midwest. I think the Villanova issue would have been a problem for them because of the guards and stuff like that, too. But and another team perhaps would have been, I wouldn't really call them a bracket buster, but I think they could, they're the type of team, you know, you gave Auburn some love. This team, I think, could have, just because of their reputation, and how they didn't have a great year, but they play up and down, you might say, oh, they're not really, because they were ranked too high, but bracket buster, because I don't think nobody, know anyone, not too many people thought they would go too far, and that's Kentucky. I think Kentucky could have made, you know, because they could get up to play Duke to win, or Iowa. They could get up to play Kansas, because they've been there, and they'd have a coach that is has no fear, except when he was, what was that? Where was he at? When he was at Memphis. did he coach Derrick Rose?
No, I think Calipari coached Derrick Rose.
That's what I'm saying. That's my point. I mean, yeah, with Calipari, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, so, yeah. So, yeah, except for Memphis, when he was at Memphis. But I think Kentucky is like that. That's how he has him rolling now. Yeah, he has them rolling out. But I think they just had that attitude where we can win. We'll play against anybody, especially now because they didn't really live up to what everybody thought. They didn't know. There was uncertainty. And I think when it's time to wrap against big game, big teams, big schools, then they had that ability. So, yeah.
All right. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty, to the final game. Kansas and Michigan State. So, without any further ado, who are you picking to win this game? All right, I think I already know who you're picking to win this game.
Yeah. I mean, I said it, but I didn't know how it was going to play out. I'll be honest with you. And I don't think you can say something, but until you really break it down into the brackets, you start to really look at the numbers and what makes sense and win streaks and things like that. I think I said it, but it was like I had to really – had to believe it. The only way you can believe it unless you get into the numbers and have some in your hypothesis, you got to have something to back it up, correct? Mm-hmm. So with that being said, my choice would have been Kansas, and I tell you why. 22-3, Michigan State. I think the thing you mentioned against Michigan State versus Gonzaga about them whether or not they can get enough points. I think that would have come into play in this game. But I think Kansas had a lot on their – they were battle-tested. The other part, too, is they were battle-tested just as well as Michigan State, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, they lost to Villanova. You know, they lost again to somebody else earlier. They lost to Villanova. I think they lost to Baylor early on. But then in that same tournament over in Bahamas, the Bahamas earlier in the year, they beat BYU, one of the teams we were talking about. They beat Gonzaga. And then they also beat Dayton by 6 in overtime. And then they beat Texas Tech, they beat Baylor, and they beat Tennessee. So I think them being battle-tested and the road that they had to come through to get to this point, I think they would just be too much. And, again, they finished the season 19-1. And I don't know if the guard matchup would have been great between Winston and Dotson. I think that would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see them go back and forth. But my question is, and I think as much as you've been dogging my big fella, Azubuike, when they played Baylor the second time, kind of showed us it's his coming out party. And I'm not certain if Michigan State had anybody to handle him, and that could be a major problem. So yeah, those two guys going, okay. And even if Winston and Dotson cancel each other out, the question is, what you gonna do with Azubuike unless you get him in foul trouble? And even against the team that when they lost to. You mentioned about the when they lost their game to Villanova, right? Then Azubuike didn't have a great game. The low-scoring game, 56-55, but he still had a double-double. I think he had 12 and 11. I just think they were on a mission, man. It's like they were mad and angry because everybody was picking on them, and they start coming through, and then you start talking about Azubuike. He got a damn attitude, and he start coming on. And just a lot of anger. You know, I love that. I love fuel. I love to use anger as fuel to win ball games. And Bill Self had a lot to prove, too, because they haven't won in a while. So, yeah, I think they were just mad. So, yeah, I would have chosen Kansas as the national champion.
Man, Black is going to listen to this show. It's like, man, Bill Self should be in jail right now. But
yeah,
I picked Kansas,
so
too.
So do a lot of people.
but when I look at it, you know, Michigan State ranked 51st in points per game with 75.9 points per game, and Kansas was right behind them, but not statistically, but they were 87th. They were ranked 87th with 74.6. So Michigan State put up a lot of points this year. I think they put up like 2,353 points compared to Kansas, who put up 2,312 points, which is almost a 50-point difference or 40-point difference. But that's really close. And so I thought that Michigan State, it would have been great to see Cassius Winston against Dotson. It would have been great to see some of those bigs with Michigan State, how they would handle Azubuike. Could they handle the pick and roll? Or the alley-oop play that Kansas loved to play, would they shut that down? It would have been very interesting to see whether or not how these teams would play. But I would have to give the nod to Kansas. Despite the history of Kansas, Kansas usually gets to the big game sometimes, not all the time, but a number of times. They showed a game last week on CBS where Kansas lost to Kentucky, got blown out by Kentucky. They lost to Syracuse back in the day where Carmelo Anthony played up against them. So in the big games, it seems like and they won with Danny in the Miracles back in the day. But it just seems like this would have been an interesting game to see. But I would have to, if I was picking and I was betting on this, I'd probably have to beat Michigan State. Even though I love Michigan State, with that grind that they had getting to this point, could they finish? Could they finish? And that was my argument with the last game in Final Four. Could they grind it out and beat a Gonzaga? And after having that tough season, kind of getting back, kind of getting hot, and we see this in the tournament a lot. Teams get hot in the first and second round. They get that weak layover, and then they don't look like the same team. And so, or they get a little rest, and they kind of cool off a little bit. But I would have to pick Kansas, and I know we're going to get in a lot of trouble picking Kansas because a lot of folks that are, we're in Big Ten country, and and the Big Ten was, to me, was the strongest conference. So
let me ask
we'll
you a
post
question,
that up, and we'll debate.
Let me ask you
what's
a question,
up?
Because this way, this kind of puts it in another factor. Let's say, and I want to hear this from you, let's say Gonzaga defeats Michigan State. Now it's Kansas versus Gonzaga. What do you have?
I would have gone with Gonzaga. I would have gone with Gonzaga. That would have been my pick. Yeah. Because Gonzaga has the big – they could score, and they got the big guys down in the house that could deal with Asubuki. You got fouls. Asubuki is not a particular good free throw shooter, especially in big games. So I would have went with Gonzaga. I think you had the guard play. Gonzaga could throw a lot of – to me, Gonzaga was the most balanced team, to me, out of the number ones. They were the most balanced team. You could say, oh, they weren't the number one team, blah, blah, blah. They were the most balanced team. And I think I really have a lot of respect for that coach. And I think he would have coached them up where they would have gave Dotson, who's a freshman, and Asubuki enough trouble. They would take away what you like to do, and they would make you grind that game out. And I've seen them do that over, even though they had their tough time in their conference with a few teams. Which that conference, to me, a lot of people kind of snuff at the conference, but it's a tough conference to play in. We don't get to see them that often, but they got some good ball players up there. I think Gonzaga would have made Kansas kind of grind it out. And can Kansas play that half-court game and grind it out and then get defensive or offensive rebounds? And Gonzaga was one of the top teams that had defensive rebounds. If you missed a shot, you weren't getting a second chance. And so could they grind it out and beat Kansas? I would have gone with Gonzaga.
Wow, interesting.
You'd have still won with Kansas, huh?
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, I would have because I don't think they played on that level before. I agree with you. I like the way that Gonzaga continues to put talent together. I was looking through the transfer portal today, and they have a guy that's coming over, a guard, that's going to help them dramatically next year. And they just kind of keep getting better. I don't know how they get guys over there, but they're doing it. So I respect that program. I do. I really do. But at some point, they have to take that step. And my biggest issue, like I said, they have everything you said, I agree. They have the capabilities of doing that and banging. But those two losses stand out to me against quality teams. In the Big Ten, you lost to Michigan, 82-64. You lose to BYU, 91-78. The thing about Kansas that really impresses me about the fact that I mentioned some of the teams that they play, in that Atlantis tournament early on in the year in the Bahamas, they played BYU and Dayton back-to-back and beat both of them. Both of them back-to-back. That's tournament basketball. I know it was early, but you played BYU,
yeah,
the team that beat Gonzaga by 13, and you beat Dayton, your beloved Dayton, in overtime. That's tournament basketball. That gets you ready for that next level. And I'm not sure, based on what I saw from Gonzaga, again, if they had the team, was it Uchimara, my buddy, Rui Uchimara, if they had that team, So if they had that team with that talent, I would definitely agree with you that they probably could have got this Kansas team. But with this team,
okay.
I told you, I think Kansas is on a mission. You know, you say what you want to, 19-1, finish the season, don't lie. And they had all of the drama with the fight and all that other stuff, people getting suspended. They still rock. It's like the more you pour gas on their fire, they like still don't believe it. And that's the book he was talking to directly, sir.
Yeah, and so they were without Sosa. So that grind, would they have made it this far without one of their major pieces? Because we didn't add that to the mix. Yeah, because
he was
suspended
coming back
indefinitely.
Yeah, but then my understanding he was going to come back for the tournament. So that's even more fire.
All right.
You know, he's been mad as hell.
So Kansas in our simulation wins the national championship, and then Bill Self, the investigation in the FBI investigation, starts to heat up, allegedly. To take their championship.
I love it.
We're going to come back and talk technical tampering in the NFL draft. We're going to talk about that. And Ice Wars, beloved Dallas Cowboys, when we get back on the Goon Squad. Sports Radio Podcast. We're going to talk some NFL. And you know the NFL is ramping up, Ice, the NFL draft, and that, hyping that up all day, every day, coming later this month. But now there's some issues with some NFL teams are saying, hey, there's going to be some technical tampering, and we're not really kind of positive about this virtual draft. What are your thoughts about this? Because they're saying, hey, should Jerry Jones and his son be in the same room when this is happening? And I'm trying to figure out what the big deal is, to be perfectly honest. What's your thoughts on this, bro?
All I know is when you say stuff like that, that means you're not ready. You don't have the technical savvy, or you don't have the equipment to do what you need to do. And they're probably nervous about Dallas or somebody reaching out to players in between the drive going, you really don't want to play for them, do you? You don't want to
play for them. Or the Patriots cheating everybody.
Yeah. But come on, man. Patriots not cheating.
I thought we had
Tom
the number
Brady
one pick.
Gone. Yeah, Tom Brady gone.
I thought we had the number one pick. How did the
look, Brady's gone. They're not cheating. Anyway, allegedly. But now they nervous because now they saying Miami Dolphins are trying to figure out how can they get that number one pick from the Bengals. So, yeah, I think it's a bunch of drama. The NFL is savvy enough, even though they have difficulty in New York trying to get the replay right in the studio. But I think they have enough technical savvy to push the Willis off, man. And actually, I think it would be quite interesting because you don't have all that stuff. They probably don't. You don't have to wait as long with all of the hoopla for TV and waiting on the draft.
I think they get the same amount of time because you know they got to showcase the players and stuff like that. But they'll save time with. I don't know if they'll have the players on virtual, kind of celebrating, and they pipe them in to talk to them and all other stuff. So I think it's going to be the same amount of time. I mean, it's 3 days, so I think it's going to be the same amount of time.
I think it'll be nice. I mean, I think it'll be different, but I think it'll be kind of cool because now you get to see that split screen, how you feel. You got 2,900 people at your house compared to being at the draft. And even though the NFL will be where they are, it still gives you the magnitude as far as the surprise. And you can really be around your folks. But the point of it is, the main thing for me is the fact is that the NFL keeps doing business. So whenever this comes back around, it comes back around. But they are still on schedule to do business. And people will be watching that. You know they will. They will be watching that. They're so desperate. And you're going to show us football. You're going to watch your team do virtual draft from your couch and watch them pick another guy and still get the same amount of, except for those that really attend the draft. But how many of us really, as fans, have been to the NFL draft? You might have been to a couple things, but nothing worth its true significance. So most people watch it at home anyway. So I think it'll be
unless it's in your city. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I think it's still they're gonna be still fired up about it. I think they'll be fine.
I had a chance to go when it was in Chicago. It was a great experience. But I'm trying to figure out, what are they afraid of that's going to go wrong? That somebody's going to blurt out somebody's name, or that they won't have their mics down and they might be discussing trades, or somebody like on Zoom they pirate your feed and pick somebody instead of who you wanted to pick? A fan to come in and say, no, we want this person. We're not this person, and shut off the mics. I don't know what they're afraid of. But I would think that the NFL is savvy enough and the technical people are savvy enough to make sure there's nobody going to be pirating in messages, things of that sort, because this sounded like a big deal earlier when they were talking about it.
Well, I mean, there's more room for error because it's the unknown, correct? And you don't know what's going to happen with fees, but that happens anyway. Like, how many times have we heard in the last 5 to 10 years where all of a sudden this video popped up with some dude getting his feet massaged and smoking a bong? I'm just saying, did you see that video? I don't know nothing about that. So, I mean, it happens anyway, and they supposed to have control over that. They were in person. Did you see that video? Dude was getting his feet massaged, smoking a bong at the same time? Yeah. So, I mean, it can happen, but I mean... I think they
this would be interesting.
I think it'd be fun. I'm looking forward to it if they do it.
So we talked about this story, moving to the NBA. We talked about this story earlier about CJ McCollum, who said that one-third of the NBA players are living check to check. And I was scratching my head because – I thought the minimum was at least $1 million or close to that for NBA players, you know, and, you know, me and you, if I was playing and I was getting $1 million a year, you know, and, you know, a little bit cut after taxes, I would have to do what my grandmother would say to make do with what you got and make sure you put something away for a rainy day and live among your means. But were you shocked when he said, hey, one-third of these players, they're not gonna make it if this season doesn't go on, or they're probably struggling right now? Were you surprised?
Yeah, but no. Because as it was stated earlier in the first 40, that a lot of guys are living above their means. And like you said, $1,000 is really no money. The $1,000 is really no cash. I'm looking at this now where it says 2019-2020 NBA player contract salary cap was 99, whatever. I mean, it was the average salary was over $6 million. Yeah.
So check to check. That's why I was scratching my head, bro.
Yeah. $6 million. So I mean, but again, let's be real. I mean, somebody was saying that what is it? When you make $1 million, you only get what is it? 60% of the cash that you're really seeing or something out of $1 million, because all of the taxes and other stuff like that too. So there is a way. Let's do it this way. There is a way for people to live above their means. So we're talking about you got to secure housing, right? For how many people?
Right.
Again,
baby mama.
Like we said, baby mamas and her too, and you don't need COBRA because you got insurance. But they did not include vision. You know the vision.
I don't
mean to
laugh at this situation. I don't.
Yeah.
But it's real.
But it is. But the problem is, if you're out here buying all these cars and taking care of people and overextending on your homes, and everybody has to have a new car, and everybody has to have outfits and. Grandmama and them and little JoJo and them had to, you know, and grandmama getting her hair done every week. That can build up. And if you're not watching, and let's think about the clothes, your clothing allowance. So there's a lot going on. Then you got to have a car. You got to have car service. You're eating out all the time. You got to have a private chef. the $6 million that we're laughing at, if you don't know how to handle your money, you're taking care of 15 people, it can go quick.
Yeah, it can go real quick.
Yeah, yeah. So it's something to think about. I mean, it's funny and it's sad, but what it is. But when you think you have it all, somebody like, oh man, I make $6 million. You, oh man, come on, I got everybody. It's like, man, $6 million. You don't realize with the taxes and everything that you're and the way that you're spending money and your houses. And if you don't have somebody to invest and have some money coming back towards you, I can see how that money could go quick because you don't you're not thinking in a fashion that is smart as far as making sure that you have income coming in and you're taking care of yourself and not overspending.
Yeah, but you know, I guess it should be how you were raised because I know, I know you well enough that you were raised by some folks who like. You know, I was talking about earlier about Marshawn Lynch saying, "You make sure you take care of your chicken." And basically, a lot of people didn't really know what he was talking about, but he was talking about take care of your money, take care of your finances, and make sure you're going to be good after you start playing. And you always kind of put something away for emergencies, or if you had to get out of town to handle an emergency, you have a pot of money where you can go. Or some financial way to say, hey, I need to get this flight and I need to get there ASAP. But it seems like, and I know Black said this earlier, it's like you go through these financial seminars as a pro athlete, but some of these guys don't get it because they don't expect that cash flow to stop. And this was so unexpected that it stopped. And I'm wondering whether or not the NBA is going to say, hey, I know you're having a hard time right now. And, you know, the money that you signed for, you're going to get. Or if you didn't sign a guaranteed contract, they can say, oh, well, pat their hands and go, you know what, you should have thought about this, you know, when you were getting that money. That's not our responsibility. Or are they going to borrow money from some of the elite players and say, listen, you know, I'm on your team, I'm on your teammate, I'm struggling right now. Can I get a loan and I'll pay you back when this thing is over? How do you think some of these guys will kind of remedy some of the things that they are going through right now, probably living check to check, and Lord knows I know about that. How do you think they'll remedy it?
One, I'm going to just say this because I'm looking now. When you said that, I started looking down at some of these numbers because they had the numbers down here, certain guys. When you start thinking about these numbers, the guys that are making this money, there's some people that are making like $187,000 for the year, like C.J. Watts. Has been around forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Orlando, he's making $333,000. He already knows better. He should know better, correct?
Yeah.
Deion Waiters with the Lakers made $500,000 this year, making $503,000. He should know better. He's been around a long time. So the guys that are not making no money, they are some of them are not either even playing or they are not really on that end. So to me, they should know better. You're not coming in here getting rich anyway. But even if you go up the ladder, and I'll come closer to some bigger names, Jonathan Simmons, used to play with San Antonio, made $1 million
mm-hmm.
last year. Marvin Williams with Milwaukee is making $956,000. These are guys that should know. As you mentioned, Jonathan Simmons came almost from the D League. From that standpoint, Gary Payton's son's playing for Washington, making $1 million a year. Beta Cates Diop from the Ohio State University, 1.4. Devontae Graham, who's playing ball out in Charlotte, 1.4. Your buddy Jalen Brunson, $1.4 million. These guys have been around. They should know better. There's some exceptions, I'm sure. Somebody else record. Your buddy Javon Carter, $1.4 million. The guard, Shake Milton, also from Philadelphia. Yeah,
yeah.
So my point is, there can be some casualties, but when you're making this kind of money, 1.4, and I keep going up the list, your buddy Amari Spellman, 1.8 million. Glenn Robinson, little big dog, $1.8 million. Markieff Morris, $1.7 million. Kyle Kuzma, 1.9. Michael Carter Williams, 2.2. Markieff Morris, 2.2. Aaron Holiday, Austin Rivers, 2.1. Carmelo Anthony, 2.1. Matt Barnes is still getting paid, $2.1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Burke, $2 million. So my point of it is, Dwight Howard, $2.5 billion. A lot of these guys should know better. And you might have something. And I even go to the $6 million guys, which will really blow you away.
Mm-hmm.
Trae Young only made $6.2 million this year. De'Aaron Fox, $6.3 million. Derrick Rose made $7.3 million this year. $7.3 million. Damari Carroll, $6.8 million. Jabari Parker, $6.5 million. Steph Curry, $7.4 million. Luka Doncic, $7.6 million. Marvin Bagley, $8.5 million. Lonzo Ball made $8.7 million this year.
Wow.
Yeah. So DeAndre Jordan made $9.8 million. Taj Gibson, $9.8 million. Markel Fultz, $9.7 million.
So some of these guys you mentioned, if you're making that much, say you take 20% off of $9 million, you should be good.
That's what I'm saying.
You should be good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. John Morant only made 8.7 only. Marcus Smart made $12.5 million this year. Miles Plumlee, $12.5 million. So...
Wow.
Corey Joseph, $12 million. Tony Snell hasn't played in 22 years. No, I'm just playing. Tony Snell made $11.3 million. So with all that being said, there are a lot of these names. I don't know how these guys are not making it. Because if you're only making that $100,000 a year like we talked about, you should not be overextended. In fact, you might want to start renting.
No.
I'll buy you a piece of property and get some of that money back. And tell grandma she can get her hair done every 3 weeks. And your girl can get a baby mama. I'm just saying, man.
Have all them things back in the kitchen? Oh, no.
Hey, baby. You know what? You better take, hey, Alice, you're going to open up a room in the back in the garage over there with some insulation. Everybody make appointments. Look,
now you know, Mama took care of you. Mama took care of you.
Mama's going to be good. The rest of them got to chill. Mama's going to be good. Hey, look, let's be real. Your wife is going to be squared away. Mama's going to be taken care of when nobody else is, even if she had to sneak. You know how they do.
Yeah.
Right or wrong. You're going to
take care. You're
going to take care of your mama, right?
Right.
You
got to
work another job.
Yeah. You got to keep mama right. Can't have them things.
Yes, sir.
Can I have them things?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to take a break, man. I want you to talk a little bit about baseball. Why is baseball teasing us, man? Why is baseball teasing us? We'll be back on the Goon Squad Sports Radio podcast.
Hit it. To my man, Kurt Cone.
Too much.
Hit it.
Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It's Ice Water and Puma with you, holding it down. And why is baseball, Ice, and I know you cover Major League Baseball, why is baseball continually trying to tease the fans about when they're coming back, how they're going to do this? Why are they doing that? Is it just to create a story or to create the buzz? Or when nobody really knows what's going to happen with this pandemic, when can we go back to, quote-unquote, our normal way of life? Why do you think they keep doing this?
Well, one, this is their season. This is their time. And the longer that you wait, I think we mentioned this earlier, the longer that you wait, the less games you play. So, which might be a good thing, but they cannot, the longer they wait, the more they're going to run into football, basketball. And that's going to be a problem for baseball. It really is. It's going to be, because baseball is supposed to be over by October, correct?
Yeah.
And so, therefore, they can't wait. You can't start baseball in October, because you might as well close the season. So, I think what they're legitimately trying to do, they want to play. They know people want to watch. They also, if we can be real about this, there's been a, even though Black Thrill would not agree, perhaps, there's been a rise, I think, in people watching baseball. And it might just be from TV because there have been some good games. You know how much we talked about the Astros and the Astros losing in the World Series and how intriguing that was with these two teams coming together with the Nationals. The Nationals versus the Astros, right? And prior to that, the Yankees. That was some great baseball. People wanted to watch. And I think that baseball wants to continue to build on that momentum. Even the series before with Houston versus the Dodgers. So we had some good baseball the last couple of years, if you agree with that. And they want to, want to miss the moment. Yeah. So with that being said, now what's the Yankees? The Yankees are loaded. The Astros have done some unspeakable. Can the Nationals return? There's so many questions. And I think baseball is kind of in a good place as far as popularity. And they don't want to miss that. So I think legitimately they're talking about maybe pushing it back to June, and that's kind of optimistic. But they're even talking about if they do it in June, they might have all the teams play like in Arizona and not have fans.
Mm-hmm.
And then start to gradually go where no more than 50 fans can come to a game. But I think they just want to get started because they know the longer they wait, more is going to cost that league. And again, you cannot wait to August to start playing baseball.
Yeah, but here's my thing, man. Don't you do more harm than good with kind of teasing? You don't know what you're going to do, but you keep throwing things out there, or the sports writers or the sports talking heads keep throwing things out there, getting people's hopes up. Because I see the NBA doing the same thing, like, you know, the commissioner going to do this, that, the other. Then the commissioner comes on like, listen, we can't determine a time. We're just going to have to ride this thing out. And I'm glad that he came out and said that. Baseball, I know it's their season, but, you know, we don't know what's happening. You got a White House that clearly doesn't know what's happening and doesn't know how to handle this. The only people you can really trust are the physicians and the doctors and the folks that have been through this before in other countries who are telling us, okay, here are the things that we did to kind of bring this thing down a little bit and get a little control of it. And here you are with sports. I think, to me, it's really showing how, although people really are searching for entertainment, but sports is entertainment. It's not an essential thing that we need to have. But they have grown to the point where they have so high a salary, there's so much money to be made in it, that if you're in it, it's essential to you. It's not essential to the fans. It's essential to the players, the owners, the folks that work at these venues. It's essential to them. It's become a life source for them. But I think they're kind of feeling, because it's like we're going to be out of millions and millions of dollars. And so we got to try to figure out how to do things, even at the expense of, because I can see this happening. They try to start something, and we're going to talk about the UFC too. They try to start something. Somebody comes up with the virus. They affect other players, and then somebody gets seriously sick, or God forbid, they pass away. for sports or other people to take this very seriously. Because there are some people who aren't taking it seriously, and we can talk about the numbers and the discrepancy with the different races and things of that sort, and some people are taking it seriously. But I think sports and everybody out there needs to take this seriously because it's not a plaything, and it's really not really good to kind of just keep kind of putting it out there that we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, to where you get to a point where you're the boy crying wolf, and folks go, you know what, I really don't care if you come back or not. I'm tired of going back and forth. I'm going to find something else to do. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but, I mean, from the standpoint of business, baseball is like, we don't have a plan in place. You can always tell us no. We'll see what happens. We don't want to sit there like the NBA right now doesn't know, and they're kind of seem to be waiting. They don't really have a contingency plan. But I think baseball is like, we're going to shoot for June. If it doesn't work, if we're still in the same situation, then we'll play it out and make that decision then. If you notice, the NCAA with March Madness did that as well. They were the last ones to give up the ghost. They were the last ones to say,
yeah,
all right, we're done. And if it had, I literally believe, we've said, people have said this before, if the Utah player had not tested positive in the NBA, I think we would have March Madness. Their biggest fear was whether or not people go, how serious it was, how they're going to be tested. Once they got the response and you started to see this virus really spreading amongst all kind of folks, and it was serious and could not be quarantined or contained, then they had no result but to turn it down. But in this baseball thing, I think the whole point of it is we're going to have a contingency plan. We have a plan in place. And this is when we like to do it, and it might get better. And they're like, if it's better, we're gone. We're jumping out there. But if it's not, then we'll move back. But I agree with you that it's essential to them. But people, that's how it is. They don't like to be told no. They don't like to be told no when it comes to sports and things like that. The folks that run sports don't like to be told no. And it does not help, no matter what side of the fence you are when it comes politically, when the man up in the big house, the White House, 45, he's telling you, oh, I think y'all can come back in May. May 3rd.
Mm.
I'm like, what?
It really just hurts the credibility.
But that starts with him.
At that particular point.
Yeah, it starts with him. Because it's like, you don't even know. I mean, we're just trying to get back to work. And you talking about, I think y'all be ready to go.
If you ask the average person who's out of a job, whether or not they care baseball or basketball, these guys get back to work, they're not thinking about that right now. That's not a priority right now. It's not. You got people dying every day, like hundreds of people dying every day, and you want to talk about baseball and when we're going to come back and we should get it's not essential.
Right.
And I think they're realizing that. It's essential to them, but it's not essential to, you know, you got bartenders, you got folks who work in the food industry, you got folks who work in schools, things of that sort. It's not that's the last thing on their mind. If a sport's gonna be, maybe it's entertainment, they can get entertainment by a movie or a game show. Sports is not essential to the average person right now. They're finding other things to do.
Yes, that's hard to say and accept though, bro. A lot of people have been on that. This is really unbelievable to a lot of people. They can't even fathom the fact that people, this is really affecting the world and people are literally dying. They want their true norm and not sure if that's ever going to come back. So to have to put this off and deal with these consequences is bizarre. I saw something on there where it was saying something to the effect that 12 signs to tell whether or not your isolation is unhealthy for you, and that's amazing to me. But it happens. So, yeah, we're in a very, very difficult time.
Yeah, yeah. On another note, you have the UFC and Dana White, who says, "Hey, I got an island, a private island somewhere, and we're gonna have some fights, and we're gonna invite certain people there, and we're gonna get it on." He hasn't revealed the location of this island. But like I said in the first 40, when he said this and this was reported, I immediately thought about the Bruce Lee movie, Enter the Dragon, where you had all those fighters on a certain island. They quarantined the fighters. They had women come and visit them into their quarters. They couldn't leave. And if you did leave or you're out walking around, they suspect you're tampering around with stuff. They boiled my boy Jim Kelly in that movie. So what do you think about Dana White? What is he trying to do here?
Well, Dana White is like, I think there's money to be made. And I think the fact that you said that WWE did something, then he's like, I can do one better. I don't need fans. I can do this. I'm going to secure everything. And I think he's keeping the location disclosed on purpose. So then that way nobody has to know. He's serious about it. Come in, let's get this fight on and do it. So that way it cuts down on the media attention. It comes down with fans just trying to show up and just a lot of unscheduled stuff. So in a way to do it, that's what you're going to do. Then I think that's the best way to do it. You kind of do it undercover. Kind of like fight night, you know, in the back alley somewhere. You just have to, yeah, we're going live on the zone. You know, coming to you live from the zone in the back of Albuquerque, New Mexico, in a pit. Dana White.
In the backyard somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying. But he's going
to
have.
That's how they used to do it.
Yeah. But he's already said that he has secured a place. And you secure the place, you secure the talent, and you secure the equipment, and then you got the cameras there. And once you have TV, it's just like pay-per-view or you're right back at it. You don't need the fans there. That's a nice thing to have, but you can still do the same thing and still get your money.
Okay, yeah. Because this is, when he first said it, I'm like, oh, man, if this is not Enter the Dragon. And, you know, you had the guy with the claw, you had Bolo. it just reeked of energy. I might pop that DVD in tonight just to watch it, to get a preview of what the UFC fight going to be. He hasn't even announced the date of the fight, but, yeah, I can't wait for it to happen. Jameis Winston is getting married. He made some views about, you know, not being taken out by Tom Brady. And switched from Tom Brady and dropped because of Tom Brady said, hey, played in the city that I loved. And, you know, maybe, you know, this was a good thing, me getting dropped for a legend. So it's not a bad thing, you know, if it was somebody else. But I remember you saying a couple of weeks ago that Tampa Bay might bring him back as a backup, but they got Blaine Gabbert, I believe, as the backup. Right. Which is no threat to Tom Brady whatsoever.
Sure.
What are your thoughts about the Tampa Bay situation?
Well, I mean, I get that. And I know they didn't want to do that because it would have been difficult for Jameis to play second fiddle in Tampa. That makes sense. I hope that he's settled down now that he's getting married and he can turn his life around. The one thing I will say, though, bizarre or whatever, even thinking that he might have been a little bit too cocky or not aware of the true situation, maybe he's catching on. But the fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers are discussing perhaps bringing him in as a backup to Ben Roethlisberger.
I thought that was a rumor.
Well, it might be, but it might be. But if you hear rumors, doesn't mean it could be very close. To me, that would be perfect. Because
how do you bring in a quarterback slower than Ben Roethlisberger? A player slower than Big Ben.
Well, but it's not about the slow. It's not about the. I guess my point is not about the how fast or whatever. It's the skill set. They struggled tremendously last year to find a decent quarterback just to even guide their team. So imagine if you had Ben Roethlisberger as your starter, he stays healthy or whatever. You take a Jameis Winston, who still is talented, he's just a little bit off the hinges and a little obscure, and you put him under the guidance of Tomlin, somebody that really can maybe grab him from a standpoint of, and maybe having similar situations. I mean, let's be real. Sometimes you got to meet people where they live, and I don't want to throw a race thing in there, but. Very similar situations. I mean, you just don't know. You don't know.
They got rid
of
one headache.
Yeah, but
they're going to inherit another headache.
But AB is on another thing, man. I don't know. Man,
right.
I've seen stranger things happen. Well, of course, the people said the same thing about Randy Moss since he came out of college.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And I was the first one to say, because you smoke a little weed, don't mean you're a bad man. Jameis Winston, I think, in the score. I'm just keeping it real. Everybody want to put you down, and then all of a sudden they have an issue. Now it's an epidemic. Come on, man.
All right. This is the part of the show where Mia Ice argue over Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. So a story came out where Fury states that Wilder is just trying to fight for money at this particular point. He knows he can't win. He's just looking at the payday at this particular point because he knows that this is Fury's last fight or one of his last fights. What are your thoughts behind that?
Well, I mean, the one thing about it, I'll say this, Fury's the champion. He can say whatever he wants to. It's wide open. He can say whatever he wants to. And that's fine. I think that he can say that. And there's nothing really that Wilder can say. He can dispute it. But Fury can say whatever. I don't know. I don't know if he's desperate for money or anything. I think he wants to fight. I think he wants to earn that right. But my problem of it is, and I said I think that overall, I think that he should wait and fight the winner because I think it would be a bigger fight. But the other issue I have with it is, and I was talking to somebody about this earlier, that Anthony Joshua legitimately lost to Ruiz, right? Was it Ruiz? Ortiz, I'm sorry, to Ortiz, right?
Yeah, Ruiz.
Yeah, Ruiz. Okay, yeah, okay. Well, Ruiz, right. So he lost legitimately. Then he comes back and changes his style almost like in a safe manner to make sure that he secured his titles to win. Now, all of a sudden, he's back at the top or near the top. How is that possible? You lost to a guy that you didn't even think, no one ever thought. In your first time in America, you got exposed. So Wilder loses one fight, and I'm just saying this, I'm not trying to be trying to bring any controversy. Wilder loses one fight. He's trash and loses. And then Joshua gets totally exposed by a guy that nobody saw who ate corn chips and whatever all during his training camp and beats him. So my point is, if you're going to fight for one, you can make the same argument for the other. That's all I'm saying. So for sure to say that, as a champion, you can say that, but he's on top. He's the king.
Well, to me, technically, Wilder lost two fights. The first
fight, and then definitely the second fight. You can't do that. Come on. We're going on the record. We ain't going on. If Drew Pearson had not pushed off and they called an offensive pass interference on him, did Michael Jordan really win that dunk contest against Dominique in Chicago? Or did Marvin Hagler really lose that fight to Sugar Ray Leonard? Come on, man.
So a draw is like kissing your sister, kissing your cousin. You didn't get nothing out of it.
It's a draw. It's not a loss, though.
But to the knockout artist, it might be because he knocked him down, couldn't knock him out. And on points, he lost that fight. So I'll give him he lost one fight. But, you know, it's the same with Carnelo. I guess they're talking about strapping it on one more time with Triple G. To me, he already beat Carnelo twice. Why go back here again to get cheated again?
Because that's the only
And Triple G just had a birthday. He's 37, 38 now.
My point. Triple G has no more money fights. He won't fight the younger guys like Andre, or he won't fight a Charlo. So the only thing he really has left is go back to Canelo. And Canelo, in my opinion, this group perhaps kind of selectively waited for Triple G to get older to make him more easier to defeat. You think about that. Now, his skills may not be the same. But again, if you really want it bad enough, you got to find out. If you know you're not going to get a decision, a la Manny Pacquiao and Juan Manuel Marquez fought five times. I watched every fight. And I said, no matter what Juan Manuel Marquez did, he could never do the right thing. He outpointed him. He did everything. He changed his style, counterpunch. He had to knock him out. So my thing for Triple G is, if you want to prove to the world that you're better than Canelo and you want to shut all this noise up, knock him out. That's the only way you're going to get it, brother. Why keep talking about it? If you're not ready for that, get out the game. If you know going in, only way you're not going to get no fair shake, quit crying about it and put the work in and show everybody that you're better. Then you'll get the love, the respect and the love you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it should be interesting, but I thought that was an interesting take on his part. It's like, hey, he knows this is the biggest money fight he's going to get. There's nobody else out there in the heavyweight division that he can see that he's going to make more money with, so this is why he's taking this fight, you know, because if Joshua takes it, that's going to make a lot of money. But I think he wanted to get to Fury before Joshua, just in case Joshua, takes out Fury. Then that fight's not going to be worth as much to me. Anthony Joshua against Deontay Wilder, I don't think it's going to make as much money as a Fury Wilder fight. Do you agree or disagree?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
I don't think if Wilder fought Joshua, that it would make nearly the amount of money as a Fury Wilder fight.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Because I don't think that a lot of people are really paying close attention. They like Josh. Joshua's cool, but he's cool in England over there. I think the fight everybody wants.
Yes.
They want that fight over in England. They want Joshua versus Fury in England. That's what they want. Yeah, that's the fight that they want. But, yeah, I mean, Joshua is not receiving any love here in America. He knows that. He knows it. Yeah, he knows that directly. So, yeah.
So we got about 2.5 minutes left. I wanted, instead of going to a last second shot, did you get a chance to see ESPN2 had some of the great fights last night? Did you have a chance to see any of those fights last night?
I did not, but, I mean, I probably seen them. So, wherever you want to talk about them.
Yeah, so the fights they had, we don't have to talk about them. They had the Ali Foreman. Me and my pop was on the phone watching that, laughing, looking at that fight again because we saw it back in the day. And the mastery of Muhammad Ali. They had the Thriller in Manila. They had a few of Mike Tyson's fights. With I know you have this thing about Mike Tyson and Deontay Wilder. But I've never seen anybody hit a man as hard as Mike Tyson was in the I'm sitting here and I've seen this fight. These guys are 30 years old. And I'm like, damn. I'm sitting there. I watched it for the first time, the uppercuts. And he was definitely trying to kill people. But then they showed Tyson against Trevor Burbick when he won the championship. Against Larry Holmes, and they showed a few other. But if you have a chance, I hope ESPN starts showing these fights over and over again. Some of the other championship fights that were on ESPN or pay-per-view, they showed Buster Douglas also. And so that was a great fight to watch again because I remember, my college sweetheart, me and Kim Patterson sat there and watched that fight that night, and we were looking in total shock of what Buster Douglas was doing to Mike Tyson that night.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, my God. this dude is tearing Mike Tyson apart. But if you get a chance to watch that, I don't know if they're going to do it every Tuesday. I don't know if they're going to do it again. But finally, they're going back to the old videotape of the fight. So we got about 45 seconds left. Thanks for listening. Hope you all are staying safe. On behalf of me and Ice and Black Thor, stay safe, stay home, and take care of yourself and your loved ones. We will see you next week. Take care.
He looks determined without being ruthless. Something heroic in his manner. There's a courage about him. Doesn't look like a killer. Comes across so calm.
Had to put some of that Wu-Tang.
Acts like he has a dream. Full of passion.
You don't trust me, huh?
Kill my father.
Well, you know why. I do. We're not supposed to trust anyone in our profession anyway.
Knock niggas out the box all the time. We don't know more motherfuckers. Rep big ball, my baby. Yeah, squad.
motherfucker. Straight up. Fuck your whole team.
Take care
up.
Of B.I. shit.
Yeah, bust it. Yo,
Josh.
B.I. niggas. Now, yo, yo, what up, yo? Time is running out. It's for real, though. Let's connect. Politics, ditto. We can trade places. Get lifted in the staircase. Word up, peace incarcerated, Scarface related style, attract millions. Fans, they understand my plan. Who's the kid up in the green land? Me and the RZA connect. Blow a fuse, you lose. Half-ass crews get demolished and bruised. Fake me frontin', hourglass heads, niggas be wanting. Shutting down your slot, time for pumping. Poisonous thing, which dumps up in act chunks. Raise a heavy generator. But yo, guess who's the black Trump? Dope be flowing by the hours. Woo, we got the collar, scholars. Word life, peace to power and my whole unit. Word up, quick. To set it, don't wet it. Real niggas lick shots, peace, Connecticut. Now, yo, yo, what up, yo? Time is running out, it's for real, though. Let's connect, politics, ditto. We can trade places, get lifted in the staircases. Word up.